Okay, so what we're going to talk about tonight is, what did Chazal think about philosophy? I think I'm going to have all the leftovers, so it makes you want to eat. So what did Chazal think about philosophy?
If I leave you
something. Okay. Did Chazal believe in philosophy? So the Rambam is like a big... We're spending the next few sessions understanding the Rambam and the idea of using, trying to understand God and how God relates to the world, right? Kabbalah understands it through some kind of tradition that's not intuitive, and the Rambam tries to use it through scientific principles to believe, how does a God who's beyond time, beyond space, relate to us? Like, so did the Rambam make this up? Like, in other words, what did the rabbis of the Mishnah and the Gemara, what did they think about philosophy? Did you learn anything about that? Because some of us know the Rambam is a big philosopher, and there are like these mystical people, like the Ramban, like mysticism, and other people. But what about in the Gemara, the Mishnah? Were they into philosophy or not? I mean, like Aristotle was Greek, so he was before the time of Chazal. So did they believe in this stuff? Did they believe in philosophy?
Some did.
Some did? Who believed in
Yeah. On the Talmud?
I'm saying in the Gemara. Yeah, it's like Gemara, another. Yeah. Is the Rambam like the first one to discuss this? Like, so some people.
I don't think so.
And did the rabbis, were they into philosophy or not? So if people discuss this, there are some places in the Gemara where they talk about what's called Greek wisdom. Okay? So if you look in the first source, so there's a Gemara in Menachos, Stav Samach Daladam and Beis, which says, Tana Rabbanan, Kishetzaru Malchei Beis Chashmonai Zelzeh. So, you know, I don't know if you like story of Hanukkah is happening soon, and we liked all the Chashmonaim right there. They defeated the Greeks. Do you know what happened afterwards to the Chashmonaim?
Hellenized.
What?
They became Hellenized.
They what?
They died.
That's true. They're not alive now. But what happened? What happened to the? What were they all good and not so good? Do you know the story a little bit about? What happened to the Chashmonaim after the story of Hanukkah?
They became Hellenized.
They become Hellenized. So there was a lot of infighting. You know, we don't want to read that story. In other words, we tell our kids the story of Hanukkah as being, oh, the Chashmonaim were all good people and they all were righteous people. But it turned out that years later, the Chashmonaim were not necessarily such great people. They were a little. You good? Okay. They became a little Hellenized. And in fact, they fought against each other, and waged war against each other, and by the way, the Romans got involved with the Jewish people because some of the Chashmonai leaders asked the Romans to help them, so that's how Rome got involved in the Jewish people. But anyway, so there was a story when the Chashmonai were fighting against each other. Hayahorkenos mibachutz. Varista bolos bifnim. So there was a time there were these two brothers who were fighting. Yet two of these leaders. There is some truth that to this story here, that Hyrcanus, he was one of the brothers, and he was on the outside of the walls of Yerushalayim. Aristobulus was on the inside, and Hyrcanus wanted to get in. He lays a siege around Aristobulus. Now, by the way, if you lay a siege around the city, right, so then nothing can come in. So one thing that cannot come in are animals to sacrifice. So you have to understand that, you know, like in the old days, or not old days, you know, there, many Jews were in the mafia, you know, in the early 1900s, right? You studied that, Arthur?
A little later than that.
Okay, but there were Jews in the mafia, right? There were Jews.
I incorporated in Brooklyn.
There you go. Right. So you had Jews.
You would know.
Okay. Right. So you had Jews who they identify with Judaism, but they didn't do such good stuff. Here you had these Jews who were waging war against each other, but they had to make sure that the sacrifices were being brought. So you had Hyrcanus was laying siege on Aristobulus inside, but b'chol yom v'yom, hayom mishalshtim lahem dinarim b'kupa umal lahem timidim. So what would they do? So Aristobulus needed, the people inside needed to offer daily sacrifices. So they needed to have sheep. So what would they do? They would send out money to Aristobulus, to Hyrcanus was on the outside. They'd like lower money outside. And then they would bring back in sheep, so they could offer them to as a sacrifice. So there was this kind of like understanding. You know, sometimes you have two nations at war. They send in humanitarian aid. So right. So here it's like they're sending out money. They're at war with each other. But the sacrifices have to go on. Meanwhile, Hoya Sham Zakin Echad Shehoya Makir Bechachma Yavanis. So there was this elder who recognized Greek wisdom. So he says, La'az lahem b'chachmas yavanis. So he hinted to them with, I guess, his Greek wisdom. Amar lahen, kol zman sha'asukim bavoda, einim sarim b'yadchem. So this Greek guy, or he told this guy who was aware, this elder who was aware of Greek wisdom, hinted to the Hyrcanus people. He said, by the way, as long as they keep on offering sacrifices, you're not going to be able to defeat them. So what happened? Lamachar shilshil lahem dinarim bekupa. So the next day, Aristobulus sends money to Hyrcanus, and vehelahem chazir. So instead of sending them back a sheep, what did they send back? A pig. Okay. Kaven shigia lachatzi choma, not sipar v'choma. Once the pig reached like half the wall, it's sort of like, you know, scratch its nails in the wall. V'nizdaza eretzio arba meos parsa arba meos parsa. And the land of Eretzio shook, because they're going to bring a pig, obviously, as a sacrifice. Bosa shah amru. At that moment, they said, Arur she yigdal chazir. No one's allowed to raise pigs anymore. V'arur she yomad bedo chachmas yivaris. You're not allowed to teach your son Greek wisdom, because this is what happened. Okay. So obviously this is like an interesting story. Like, you know, like, what's the lesson here? You have these two brothers who are fighting, right? And they're still offering carbonos, like kind of a little hypocrisy and consistency here. But here we find this statement of Chazal saying that you shouldn't teach your son Greek wisdom, because, why? Because they used it in order to trick, I guess, you know, to offer up this pig, I guess. Okay? So that's one thing that Greek wisdom, Chazal said Greek wisdom is bad. And then, so there's a curse against Greek wisdom. And there's another famous story about Greek wisdom. This is Menachos Daf Tzadi Testament Base. And here, the Gemara says, Shal ben Dama ben Achosel, Shal Rabbi Shmuel, Shal Rabbi Shmuel. Ben Dama, the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, asked Rabbi Shmuel, Kigon ani shalamati kol tarkula. So Ben Dama said, I learned the whole Torah. Back then it was easier, right? Because this is like, nowadays, the whole Torah is like Mishnah, Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, Poskim, all this stuff. Back then, there was no Mishnah. There's less Torah, but still a lot.
There's still
Baal Pat, right. So whatever it was. He said, I learned the whole Torah, whatever it was. Mahu lilmod chachmas yivadis. Can I now start studying Greek wisdom? So kara lav hamikra zeh. So Rabbi Shmuel read this pasuk from Sefer Yoshua. Lo yamu Sefer Torah zemi picha, v'chisim v'yom v'layla. Don't allow the Sefer Torah to depart from your mouth, and you should contemplate it day and night. Meaning you should study Torah day and night. Say ubedok shah she'ena lo mina yom v'lo mina layla, v'lomo b'chach mas yivani. So just find a time that's neither day nor night, and you can study Greek wisdom. So of course, what do you do it? Ben Ashmashos, right? I don't know. Between so anyway, so like a kind of, I don't know, it's like a tongue-in-cheek answer, like kind of thing. Where
I wouldn't be using Greek wisdom.
Right, they would be using Greek wisdom, right. So the truth is, what exactly is Greek wisdom here? Does this sound, so the first source seems to say it's like a curse against it. The second source seems to say it's like a waste of time, I guess. But I guess, what is Greek wisdom? Does that mean, is that philosophy that they're speaking out against? What is, what? It
might be any secular learning.
I mean, any type of secular learning.
Yeah.
Right, what specifically, let's say from the first story, well, back in those days, well, the secular learning times of Chazal was probably Greek wisdom.
From the first story, there was no real philosophy. It was more just...
Right, what do you think it was?
More almost trickery,
yeah. Yeah, it was like a trickery, it was like a code. So, right, so like Rashi, so it's very important. So people may use these Gemaras and say, oh, obviously Chazal were against Greek wisdom. They're against philosophy, but it's not so clear that what they were against was actually Greek wisdom. Rashi translates Chokhmah Yavanis as remizu, some kind of hinting. It almost seems as if this elder doesn't want to get caught, and as the elder wants to secretly, you know, tell the Hyrcanus, you know, how he can attack, how he can successfully defeat Aristobulus, and he's almost like, but I don't want to get caught, so I'm going to like hint it to you in a way that, you know, I won't get caught. It's like kind of And that's, it seems like that's what's good, because there are a lot of spies probably around. And the Maral Nesivas Olam says the following. He says, "V'ein svar lomar ki afsha chachma hi chachma gemura." He says, you can't say that he says, even if chachma is chachma gemura, is real wisdom, mikol kol ein lo lasser min haTorah, you see, what gives you from Lila, okay, fine, you have to say Torah day and night. Ve'ish lavi raya el svarazu b'meseches menacho, so he cites the story of Dama ben Nesina. But if you look about four lines into the Sivas Olam, he says, "Vim kein muchach de chachmas yevanis asura lilmod mipnei shekasev gizvo yom v'layla." Okay, he says you can't study chachmas yevanis because it said you should study Torah day and night. Abal nira, look what he writes: "De chachmas yevanis de hasam iri chachmas she'elo shaychas el Torah klal." That's referring to wisdom that's not connected to Torah at all, like, you know, pop culture. I don't know. No, not pop culture. But it's like in those days. Like, he said it's probably not referring to like wisdom that helps you with Torah. Kemo chachma shehi b'melitza o mashal, like, you know, parables or poetry. V'chachma zos ein la shaychas klal el haTorah chsi begisav yom v'layla. You have to think about God day and night. So Greek wisdom, which has nothing to do with Torah, it doesn't mean any secular knowledge. See, it's much more limited. It's referring to, like, you know, that's what we say, you know, like, what's you know, the danger of college or the danger of Greek, of secular studies. So, like, are you nervous about, like, actual, you know, intellectual study, or are you nervous about pop culture? You know, there's high culture, there's low culture. So it seems that Nesivas Olam is actually saying that Chachmas Yevanis is referring to low culture, because the story of this Gemara is just about the mashal or melitza or remizus. But look what he writes: "Aval chachmos lama al metzius." But wisdom, so that you understand creation, v'seder olam, and the way of the world, bevadig mutar lilmo. You're certainly allowed to study. That's melitza v'lasha. It means a language here and there, and he cites this Gemara about him reading Bosa Shah, Amru Ara Isha Yigdal Chazerim Va'aru Ha'adam Shiamis Beno Chachmas Yevanis. And then he says, Shall base Raman Gamliel, he tiru al Hamlet, Saper Bechachmas Yevanis. The house of Gamliel, they allow them to teach, to say Chachmas Yevanis, but they should crow him Lamalchus. So they said they were allowed to speak. The house of Gamliel says, because they were always talking with the governing officials, they could speak. And they had to speak. They were allowed to engage in Chachmas Yevanis, so it seems to indicate it's related to language. So he wants to say, so my point is, if someone were to tell you that Chazal were against Greek wisdom and study of philosophy based on these stories, it's not altogether clear. Because what seems what they're against is, you know, anything that doesn't have to do with, like, wisdom. In other words, if you take the view that anything that can get you closer to God, to understand God, to understand how God created the world, you know, how he relates to us, studying psychology, studying anything that understands ourselves to make ourselves better, even if we understand what our purpose on this earth is, anything that it's not a violation of this curse of Chachmas Yevanis. This is like low culture. This is like hinting, cute rhymes, cute poetry. You know, you want to go out to the movies, so go to a time that's neither day nor night. Right? That's what Yishmael is telling. That's what he's telling Ben Dava. You want to do something. You want to do something that's like nothing to do with wisdom. Find a time that's neither day nor night. But real philosophy, that maybe is not forbidden from Chazal. Okay. There's one story. There's one time in the Gemara where there is a mention of someone who's called a philosopher. And this is an interesting story. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Tes Vav and Aleph, it says, "Ima Shalom, de Viso de Rabbi Eliezer, Achse de Rabbi Gamliel Habe." So the Ima Shalom was the sister. I'm sorry, was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer, and she was the sister of Rabbi Gamliel. So you have this Ima Shalom, Rabbi Gamliel. They're brother sister. Hava hu filosofa. There was this philosopher Bishuvuse who in the neighborhood. De Hava Shakil. He had this reputation that he never accepted bribes, but she and Rabbi Gamliel knew that he did accept bribes, and they wanted to prove that he was really a bad guy. This philosopher, he came off this perception, like he's a good guy, he never accepted bribes. So what do they do? So boy lachuchele. They want to sort of mock him, but they want to sort of disclose to everyone to show that he's not really a good guy because he's sort of tricking everyone, making himself like a good person when he's really accepting bribes. So Ailele Shraga de Dahava. So she brings him this golden candle, this golden lamp. Vazla Kame, she comes to form. I'm related to him. Ba'ina, Deniflagi Li, Benirse de Beinasha. I want half of the inheritance for the family's inheritance. In other words, I have a brother, his name is Rabban Gamliel, and I want half the inheritance. Okay? So Amar Lahu Plogu. Okay? So he says, okay, good idea. Split the inheritance. You get 50%, your brother gets 50%. Amar Le, Rabban Gamliel turns to him and he says, Ksiflan, Pemokom Bra Bartoloteros. So this is gonna be politically incorrect. I'm only men here now, but it's being taped. He says, when there is a son, the daughters don't inherit. So I'm just telling you that you can. There are ways to get around this in a will. You know, there are halachic ways, not for our topic. But according to the strict letter of the law, the story of the daughters of Tzlavchad. So why do they get inheritance then? Because why?
Didn't have any brothers.
Because there are no brothers. So if there are brothers, unless you write the will the correct way, halachically the girls don't get anything. In those days, obviously things were different than now. But there are ways to split everything equally. But if you don't do anything, according to the strict letter of the law, the sons inherit, the girls don't inherit. So here this guy, because she gave him what? She gave him a golden lamp. She bribed him. He's like, split it. So then Rabban Gamliel turns to this philosopher and he says, but wait, I'm a brother. She shouldn't get anything. He said, no, Amar Le, min yoma diglisun me ar achon is natilas oraisa demosha vishav avon galyan. He says, from the days that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, you were exiled from your land. So then the Torah Moshe was taken from you, and this other book, Avon Galya, was given. Uchsiv Bein, it's written in this book, Bro Barta Kachada Yartu. They inherit equally. Okay. Lamacha Hader Aila Le Ihu Chamra Luba. The next day, Gamliel comes to this philosopher, and he gives him this, like, I don't know, this donkey from Louvre, I know, from like this fancy place. Fancy donkey, very expensive. Worth a lot more than the golden lamp. So, okay? So Amar Lahu, he said to them, Shafilsa Lesefe de Avon Gilyon. Oh, I you read the end of this Avon Gilyon, Vixiba, Ana lo lemifchas bin araisa de Moshe Asisi, v'lo sifa l'araisa de Moshe Asisi. So he says, in this book, actually, if you read the end, it says, I don't come to add or to take away from what Moshe, the Torah of Moshe says, Uchsiv Bein, it's written in the Torah, but Makom Bra Bartolotero. So he basically, because the next day he turned around and said, oh, I actually read the end of this book and said that actually you have to follow the law of Torah's Moshe, and basically the man gets, the son gets everything, the daughter gets nothing. And then Amrale, she said to him, she said, Nahor Nahorach Kishraga. But she's hinting to him, you know, Your light is like the light of the candle. She's hinting the fact that she gave him a candle. So how come he's not? She gave him a lamp. So how come he didn't paskin like her? So Amalei Rav Gamliel and Gamliel said back to him, Asa chamro bata lishraga. My donkey came and kicked over your lamp. So like my bribe was better. So that way he was able to prove he was wrong. So this is the only time to mention a philosopher. I don't think this proves that philosophy is bad. It just proved there was this guy, and he was like a bad guy. It doesn't prove necessarily that philosophy is bad. So these are the only. So again, if someone wants to tell you,
but
that
why does it have to mention that he's a philosopher?
It could be that he was a guy. I don't know.
Gavra.
I don't know. Right. I don't know. It could be that this guy, you know, maybe, you know, what? Again, it didn't say that he was. It didn't say that it was a philosopher. That he was known to be someone maybe a deep thinker, but he might have been a hypocrite. So it's hard to know. I'm saying you can't necessarily say it was because of that.
I agree. I'm just pointing. It's interesting that it mentions that he's a philosopher.
It could be that maybe he was someone to be known as a deep thinker, but really he was a trickster underneath. So it's hard to know exactly. My only point to you is that there's no real evidence in Chazal that the rabbis took a hardline stance against studying philosophy, secular wisdom from non-Jews. Again, it seems that this Chochmas Yevanis, it certainly can be argued, and some of Farshim do argue, that it's really more like low culture, nothing to do with trying to understand the wisdom of God. And number two, this philosopher it's not so clear that they were against him because he was a philosopher, because he was a hypocrite and he used bribes, took bribes. But Rabbi Yeshaya of Tirani in the 13th century, so he says, but wait a second. It says, it's true that maybe they didn't speak out against it. But he says, V'chein hadavar yadu l'chol chachmei lev. It's known to anyone who's smart. Someone is mistaken, doesn't go to the depth of the matter. He says certain things are known to people really smart. But he says that people just understand, like I said, the people who understand about God through the depths of their knowledge, okay, it's one thing, but if you simply don't go into depths, and you understand a pasuk the way a pasuk is supposed to understand. And he says, let's say the following. And let's say, V'savar Shekadosh Baruch Hu Bal Tamuda. Let's say you read the Psukim and you think that God has a body. You say it's heretical. But by the way, what indication from the Torah is there that God perhaps has a physical form or has such that... What?
If he's sitting on the chariot.
Yeah. That's like, right. Now, there's if you want... We're so used to God not having a body that... It makes sense because he doesn't have a body. But if you didn't know that, and you just read the Psukim, you would think that what your kids do, that he's an old man with a long white beard. I don't know what age they stop believing that. But
he gets very angry.
What? He gets very angry, right. He gets very angry.
He's jealous.
And then you have to hide in the bathroom so God doesn't find you in the bathroom, right? Okay, so then you're there. But like at some point in our lives, right, or some point in our kids' lives, they realize that God is not this, you know, old man with a long white beard. Right, and okay. So, but because you read the Psukim, it seems there are a lot of physical descriptions associated with God. And he says, this Riaz, this Rabbi Shai of Tirani says, you're not a heretic if you believe that God has a body. She im kain huadav, because if this is the case, echlo pirsma Torah al davar zeh. Why wasn't the Torah explicit about this? V'lo gilu chach mi'atam v'lo diya davar zeh begalui. And also, the in all of Shas, Mishnah, Gemara, you don't find the rabbis telling you, by the way, that God doesn't have a body. The rabbis don't talk about who God is, who God isn't. They don't. They do say, by the way, if you don't believe in resurrection of the dead, you have no portion of the world to come. The Gemara does say certain things. But the Gemara never talks about, you know, God as being beyond time, beyond space, how he relates to the world. The Gemara doesn't say that. Ulahazir, you know, and he says, "L'hazir nashim ami aris al kach shlo yiyu minim v'yobdu olamam." So, people who don't know, you know, women then were uneducated. Other people weren't educated. You see all these people who are uneducated, and they read the simple reading of the Torah, and they think that God is a body. And all of them are lost. All of them are, you know, they're going to be destroyed. All of them will be punished by God. Halo kama asurim kalim kugon isrim muksav chiyotze bo chibru chachavim kama halachos v'harbe v'hirbu kame dikdukim lahami kol davar machono. The isrim muksa, that's a rabbinic prohibition. And the rabbis go to town. You read the Mishnah, the Gemara, like they spend so much time. This is muksa, that's a muksa. You can move a muksa like this, you can't move like this. They spend so much time dealing with this, right? Valdavar zeh. Shekol ha'amuna tuluya bo, and on this matter that the whole world, that all of faith depends on, but that God has a body. V'yesh bo kares b'lo zev olam haba, eich lo horu chacham al davar zeh begaloi. If belief in belief that God doesn't have a body, and understanding the nature of God, if that's something that's so crucial to our faith, that if we don't understand it, then we get kares? Why didn't the rabbi spend a little time on telling us this? That, by the way, you know what it says in the Torah? Remember, in those days, you know, some people believe actually in statues. Now, we live in a time where nobody believes in this stuff. But back in those days, people believed in that stuff. You would have expected that the rabbis would have been a little clearer about this stuff, right? No. Okay. So he says, "Avavade lo hikpidu l'kach." But certainly they weren't particular about this. Why? Eliyamid adam hayichud kfisuklo. He said, you know, everyone should understand God, according to his understanding. You're not a heretic if you believe that God is a body, according to this Riaz. So why would you think, by the way, that the rabbis would not tell us in detail about this stuff? Well, why would you think that? I mean, it's a good question, no? If this is so fundamental to our faith, why would the rabbis not go into depth about God, the nature of God, and how he runs the world, and how he interacts with the world? Again, we don't live in a world where we believe that God is a physical form. Now, the major religions of the world don't believe in stuff. So it's not a test for us, but 2,000 years ago, right? Why aren't the rabbis a little more explicit if it's so fundamental? You understand the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right. Any thoughts? Okay. So this is what he writes. It's a good question, though. No? I don't know if you ever thought about that. He says, "Vafilu." He says, "Everyone should believe according to understanding." Afilo nashim kfi miut sichlam. Right. So everyone should understand. Okay. The women then did not have education. Okay. It's nurture, not nature. Okay. So anyway, Shamar Moshe Alav Shalom.
The answer could be because if they tried explaining it,
yeah,
they would just have a bunch of questions for other people.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be able to answer.
Exactly.
Questions.
Exactly. Good. So you do have an answer. Good. So he says, she says the following. He says that better everyone should understand very simply. Amar Moshe Alav Shalom Shema Yisrael Hashem Ken Hashem Echad. Okay? And just know that Hashem is one. Vishama Lashon Shmua Veloshon Kabbalah. So he says that what's our role? Shema Yisrael, listen, and it's a Lashon of understand, listen, and accept. Sha'al pi Shmua, hearing, Val pi Kabbalah, based on tradition. Yami Dabarzeh, you should believe this. Velo Nasan Moshe Torah Yisrael, Ela Bederech Emunah Vederech Kabbalah. Says the way that Moshe gave the Torah is not based on logic. He gave the fundamental principles of faith are based on faith, right? Principles of faith that people heard and based on tradition. The rabbis did not get involved in this stuff. They just said whatever our teachers told us. That's what we do, and it's just a mesorah. V'lohoru lidrosh v'lachkor al inyan halokut. Well, Inyan Shara Chachmut Klal. He says the rabbis did not get involved in the nature of God, how He created the world, how God relates to the world. They didn't get involved in this stuff. If there were individuals who understood this stuff, Lo Yumar Bahem L'Rab. They wouldn't teach the masses this. Why? Torah didn't command us to do this stuff. I think for your reason exactly. Because, you know what? Better sometimes don't ask the questions if you can't get a good answer. That's always the question, right? Do you encourage questions? That's always a question. Every parent, right? Every parent needs to know. Every school needs to know. Which is, do you encourage questions when you know you may not be able to answer everything? What's the best way to keep ourselves and our kids from? Right? Do you encourage questions? And how many questions? And how much you give answers? And what the level of the answers are? And does it lead to greater faith, less faith? So he's of the view, the Riaz, again, it's not the Rambam's view. The Riaz of the view, he says, the rabbis did not deal with this stuff. Hashem is one. Don't get how he relates to the world. A few people dealt with it, but you know what? It's going to cause more problems. It's going to cause more problems than solutions. So people who themselves want to delve in it and they can handle it, okay, they can deal with it.
But even people who delve in it anyway, at the end of the day, Judaism is not based on logic. It is faith. It's either you believe
right.
or don't believe.
Right. So
you can try logically to figure it out and understand, you never will.
Right.
It's just a matter of you either believe or you don't.
Right. Well, again, I think there is some of that, but there's also, I think, some of, I think there's a question is, do you go from like, not? There's obviously a certain amount that we're not going to definitely understand. I mean, the Rambam does believe, the Kuzar, there are, we'll talk about this, there are there are sources of Emunah that either, you know, I don't definitely prove, but provide some sort of indication, and they're helpful for some people, other people think it's not helpful for. And
philosophy can help you with trying to explain that God exists, but not saying that it's Judaism.
Okay, well, you're correct. There are other principles about could there be revelation to 600,000 people? You're right. Certain proofs could prove the existence of God. Certain proofs could prove the existence. You know, that the revelation is likely true, or more likely than not. But I hear you. Or maybe at least for us to try to appreciate, we have faith, but what's my role in this world? So try to understand what's my relationship with God to have a deeper understanding. So I'm just doing these mitzvahs. But let's assume I have basic faith in God. So what am I doing here? So like there is something, even if you do have faith, to try to sort of understand what my role in this world is. I think that do we try to do that as well? Could that be helpful in our avodas Hashem also? Maybe, okay? So he's saying that Chazal is uninterested in philosophy. The Rambam disagrees, of course. So why does the Rambam disagree with this? It seems to be a pretty compelling argument. So the Rambam says, he says, Da, ki achachmos, it's more nevuchim. He says, ki achachmos ha-Rambam sher ha-yu b'umasenu ba-mitas elo an-yonim avdu ba-orech ha-zman. He says that the originally people did have a lot of wisdom, this type of secular wisdom, to understand the nature of God, but with the passage of time and the persecutions, it was forgotten. And there was confusion. And everything was not open to everyone, like we explained. So he says, not everyone had access to all information, but they only had what was written in books. He said that we know that even Torah was originally not written down. Torah was what? It's passed down, and it wasn't written down. Le'inyan ha-mispashet ba'oma. Right, devarim shamarti lecha al pi iatarashi lomar bichtav. Right, Torah, the Mishnah wasn't written down. Why wasn't it written down? By the way, why was Torah not written down? By the way, other than the Chumash, why was Torah Shabbat Pen not written down?
Because it constantly evolved.
So why can't you write down what you have?
There was a fear of it being.
He did it. So you want to get, lose it? Okay, you might lose. Down. So what's the original basis for not writing it down? Yeah,
there was a fear of it going out to the wrong people and it becoming too accessible.
Now, if something's written down, right, then people can maybe tamper with it, maybe. Right? I mean, what? When you've thought about that, I think, any other thoughts? Like, why would the Torah not be written? Why would they say don't write the Torah Shabbat Pad down? You ever thought? I mean, you're familiar with that prohibition, right? Yeah? Okay. All right, so he says, and the reason is because what happened after was written down. Once something written down, what does this mean? What does that mean? There's a suffix. Does it mean this? Does it mean that? And mistakes are associated with it. And there's machlokes. What does this mean? What does that mean? So sometimes if something is not written down, then you have to ask someone who knows. Once something's written down and everything's open, then it can lead potentially to more mistakes. Now, if you honestly felt, if you don't write it down, then there's going to be too much confusion. So, like, it's what's better, what's worse. But what he ends up saying, and look at what Rabbi Nathan Wiederbleck writes in his book. He said, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi prevented that catastrophe by writing down the legal section of the oral law, an activity that should have been prohibited, but was justified due to the exigencies of the time. There's, what it really should have been is, don't write down Torah Shabbat Peh, because there's this halacha, that halacha. Just go directly ask the rabbi what the halacha is, and because once something's written down, then there could be confusion. It may not be written down precisely, and there'll be and but he saw people were forgetting stuff. You have to write things down. Yeah.
Wouldn't you think that it's going to be less precise if it's not written down?
So it depends. I guess if you have one, if you're copying books. And there's no like printing press. If you're copying books, so then maybe, like, you know,
there'll be mistakes. But
right. So if you have a few people to go to, so maybe the original sources would not, the original sources maybe would not, you know, what he's arguing that maybe the original sources would, you know, they would make sure that to say everything correctly. There's what's like that. You can debate the point. I hear what you're saying. But what he's arguing is he's saying, no such measures were taken regarding the philosophical tradition due to the concern that writing it down would inevitably cause those not ready to study philosophy to be exposed to unsuitable material with potentially disastrous results. So he gives a reason why Chazal did not discuss philosophy. So they didn't write it down because certainly philosophy is very hard. And that's, so they wanted to leave it only to those who could study it well. So this was like to a limited few. We don't want to write it down. Halacha, we have to write down. If you don't write it down, people are going to make a mistake. But philosophy, we're not going to write down because if the wrong people study it, they're going to get really confused. Right? That's what the Rambam himself writes. He says that, right? He says that this is a high level thing. But what's the concern? You could get it wrong. There could be mistakes.
Also, so, you can also argue that
philosophy you don't need to write down because any philosopher should be able to figure it out.
Okay. I hear you. But in any case, so what I wanted just to summarize what we said tonight is the following. Again, it's not clear that Chazal were against Greek wisdom. There are very few times in the Gemara where we mention Greek wisdom. It might not even be referring to high culture. It might be referring to low culture, which they're opposed to. There is a story of a philosopher, but what they're opposed to is his hypocrisy. Why didn't Chazal speak about philosophy? So you did have an opinion. Rav Yishai of Tirani said that they didn't speak about philosophy because that's not, it's too dangerous. Why should we get involved in philosophy? Just understand things on a basic level. So those who want to understand it in depth, they can understand it in depth. But the rest of us understand it simply, and that's why Chazal didn't discuss it. The Rambam says no. The Rambam says in Mor Nevuchim, they didn't discuss it. They did discuss it, but they never wrote it down. They never wrote it down, and therefore things were forgotten because they didn't write it down. Why didn't they write it down? Because they didn't want to write it down because there could be confusion. Now, the halacha, they had to write it down so you didn't forget it. But philosophy, they did not write down. Sort of like those who believe that, you know, this whole story, when was Kabbalah, when was mysticism given? Was that older or was that later? So some hold that it was like, you know, what didn't begin, you know, began with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And again, it was only given to a select few also because it could be misinterpreted. So that's the same argument that Rambam was making about philosophy. That again, he didn't want to go into depth. He didn't want the masses to read philosophy because they can misunderstand it. But at the same time, the Rambam feels, I guess, if society needs it, then we need to study philosophy because this could help us understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu better. And this is an interesting question, right? In other words, if you think about it, what produces the frumest Jew, the most halachic Jew? It's interesting, right? It's a good question. What produces the most halachically observant Jew? Is the most halachically observant Jew the one who delves into these really deep questions of what my purpose on this earth is, and how does God relate to the world, and then once I get it, now I understand my purpose on the world, or will that lead me to question even more?
Depends on the person,
right? Or simply the person, emunah pshuta, shema yishol keshem echad, what does this mean, what does that mean? I don't care, I'm fine. Give me a Shabbos table, some Eros, and a bowl of cholent. And I'm good. Right? So why in Chazal teach it to us? So again, I think you have two different perspectives. But I think that could justify, this justifies the Rambam's position, saying Chazal were not necessarily against philosophy. But God willing, next week we will discuss the Rambam's opponents and their strong anti-philosophy stand. And that's really for next week.